And I believe this morning calls for me to speak among you, not at you, not to you, but with you. Ideally, that happens every morning that we gather, no matter the posture, but it just seems appropriate this morning that I stand as part of the gathered body for what I want us to reflect on together. And we shall reflect on that together. First of all, I am changing the scripture reading. That is always the preacher's prerogative. Just because it's in print doesn't mean we have to follow the script. If you're one of those people who believes that you must follow everything here, then when you get back home, I invite you to pull out your own trusty Bible and read what you didn't hear me read this morning. It's going to get even more fun than that. Because we, that means you and I, are going to tell the story of Noah together. In fact, I'm not even going to open my Bible. Because I believe you know the story as well as I do. And perhaps Stark's version may not exactly match Cheryl's version, but we'll keep telling it until we get it to the point where we think that's just about right. All right? How does the story of Noah begin? I need one brave soul. I should have planted someone here. Barbara. People had screwed up. That is not in the New Living Translation. What it does say is that people were corrupt and violent. The world was not what God had intended it to be. Things were a mess. We had screwed up. So, just like today? Did you just say that, really? The Bible might actually have some relevance to our own lives today. You'd rather me be back up there, wouldn't you? All right, so people had screwed up big time. And time to start over. Who makes the decision to start over? God makes the decision to start over. Things are just absolutely beyond repair. This is a failed experiment. We are going to flush it down the drain. I think that fits the story. I think it does. So what does God decide to do? We're going to have a flood. Interestingly, the flood is one of those archetypal stories that no matter where you go in the world, there are pieces of a flood story. Ours shows up here in the book of Genesis, but other people remember, and somehow it's been passed down to them, remember when the earth came very close to being no more. Interesting thought about that. So God decides to send a flood. And that's why none of us are here anymore, right? Because the flood came, it filled up the planet, and everything was wiped out. Peter says no. It rained for 40 days and 40 nights. But do you know how much rain that brings? A lot. A lot of rain. But what does God do at this point as opposed to just flushing it all down the drain? I'm hearing somebody back here.
I believe he tried to give orders for people to follow through.
And it didn't work. But was there somebody? What about Noah? All right, Noah was judged righteous by God. Noah was judged a good person. And that apparently God's intent was not simply to wipe out a bad experiment, but in fact to start over. And so God identified Noah as being the one that we would use to start over. So Noah gets some instructions to build a what? An ark. What's an ark? A very big boat. Yeah, these are cute, nice boats up front here. But I haven't seen the ads for it. I understand there's a new movie coming out about Noah and the ark, and it might give us all a sense of how big that vessel might have been. Huge! Is Billy here this morning? All right. And it is that big because why? Gonna load up all the animals. Penguins? Yep. Polar bears? Yep. Cats? Yep. I don't know if he had to load up the fish, though. They didn't have to load up the fish. Fish were probably okay. The sharks? The sharks were on their own. Okay. Are there other animals that you wish to make sure are included? My 9-year-old granddaughter, here's what she wanted to do in Ireland. 8 days in Ireland, and she thinks this is what we need to do, visit the Dublin Zoo. We travel all the way overseas to take in ancient sites, monastic ruins, the history of Christianity's arrival there and how it plays out and the history of Ireland itself. I want to see the zoo. We're going to the zoo, right? Have you ever raised a 9-year-old? At some point, you darn well better visit the zoo. So there were giraffes who must have been on board, and there were rhinoceri, I don't know, and hippopotami, and all kinds of interesting animals on board. So it did need to be huge. Who else went on board? Noah all by himself? See the zookeeper? Noah and children. And I believe they were all male offspring. So we're missing a core component here to the story. Noah's wife and the boys' wives. Okay. And they all get on. And Peter's already told us it rains for 40 days and 40 nights. And if you go back and read your story, how much does the water fill the earth? All the way up. Name the tallest mountain peak, and there is water above it. It is all the way up. This is like turning on the bathwater and forgetting about it. I know none of you have ever done that. But the water came down and down and down. What happened to those who are not on the ark? Any hope? They're gone. And those on the ark, they live. Does the story end there? How does the story come to conclusion? So it's raining and raining and raining, and finally 40 days and 40 nights are up. And the water has risen. It has taken a while for the water to rise that high. So what then begins to happen? It begins to subside. Okay? So Noah is interested in getting off that boat, apparently. Noah does not want to spend the rest of his life on that boat. There must be a good reason why you would not want to spend your life on a boat like that. So Noah sends out a bird, a dove, and the bird comes back. How? Initially, nothing. Brings the bird back in. And maybe another couple weeks go by and we try again. And this time, there is the sign of vegetation, an olive branch. And eventually, the waters subside and the boat comes to rest. Where did the boat go? Oh, where did the water go? I mean, I'm puzzling over that too, Peter. When the water table is that high, where does it go? I think we have to talk to Native Americans for that answer. Okay. Eventually, the boat comes to rest on a mountain peak. And according to our biblical record, that mountain peak is in Turkey, and there are people who claim that they can find the remnants of that. What happens then? The boat comes, people bail out, the door opens, the animals exit, and what does God do at that moment? And Eric, what's the rainbow a symbol of? The rainbow says God will not destroy the earth and vegetation and animals and people ever again. And the story ends there, at least kind of. And then, if I had my Bible and hadn't left it behind, you'd see that that's in the book of Genesis, the very first set of stories in the whole Bible, chapters 6 through 8, probably somewhere around page 12 in that thick book, which means there's a whole lot more to come. I did not forget about you while I was in Ireland. I kept you in my prayers. But I also was mindful that there is a change coming, a change proposed by our district superintendent. And I prayed over that. Not to pray about what to do, because that will be your decision, but to pray about what is my responsibility as a pastor, as a spiritual leader, as a person whose job is not to figure everything out, but to help us connect our story today with God's story as carried forth for us in the book of Scripture. 100 years ago this month, does anybody know what happened to this church? 100 years ago, to this very month, there was a fire. And what did that fire do? It destroyed this sanctuary. 100 years ago, this very month. And the church was thrown into a tizzy. Well, wouldn't you? What do we do? What do we do? Where do we go? How do we hang together? Does anybody know what we did? What our ancestors did? We rebuilt, but we just do that, and this wasn't built in a day. We went up the street and just over there, we had offers from about 5 different congregations to take us in, to welcome us, to harbor us. for however long it might take. And long before we ever talked about something called interfaith relationships, there was an offer from the Temple Society of Concord, now known simply as Temple Concord, to have this body of Christians come share the building with them for however long it took. And our foremothers and forefathers made the decision to worship at Temple Concord while this building was being rebuilt. I believe it's an interesting parallel to contemplate an unknown future that has been dropped into our laps. Because just a month ago, exactly a month ago tomorrow, in the room directly below our feet, about 36 people from churches, United Methodist churches all across the city of Syracuse gathered to begin to try to understand the proposal, the plan that was coming forth from our district superintendent that amounts to the following 5 ingredients. First of all, that the 8 United Methodist churches in the city of Syracuse would no longer be 8, but would be 1. In some fashion, it's called a blended or a cooperative ministry. Secondly, that the 8 pastors currently assigned to those 8 churches would be reduced by at least half. You can hear some vagary in that, right? And it's begun already, has it not, Peter? Peter, anybody you know who's exiting the city? All right, so she's going to continue to be involved in urban ministry, but will not be part of whatever new clergy team is being planned and proposed. Thirdly, that the ones who remain will function as a team. That the entire team will be intended, and if you're a visitor this morning, I apologize, because you're getting in on family business. But you know what? If you have any thought of wanting to be part of our family, it's important for you to know about family business. We wouldn't want to snooker you. But that those remaining clergy, however many they are in number, would begin to function as a single team. Now, I've been praying for that for a long time. Not for the massive plan as a whole, but God help us, 8 pastors, each doing their own thing, and no coordination among us? No way of saying, let's dedicate one of those persons to providing pastoral care every single day of the week. Not when Craig can squeeze it into the rest of his chores and assignments, but how do we begin to allocate the resources? Because the churches, frankly, are spending oodles and oodles, right, Vito? And oodles of money paying salaries and heating bills. And we know what has been happening to our congregation, that we have shrunk a bit, and we are by far the largest United Methodist Church in the city of Syracuse. Right now, there are sisters and brothers worshiping in other churches, numbering maybe 15 people in worship. And this is painful for people who've been through it before, and people who've been through it very recently as Presbyterians. But let's talk about, I've got 3 points, and I've got 2 more to go, right? I said 5. What have I missed? Oh, key point. 8-1 does not mean selling off buildings, at least immediately. But what is being proposed that on Sunday morning, your choices as the United Methodist for where you might worship will shrink down from the current 8 down to 2. Don't ask me to tell you what those 2 will be, because I don't know. And don't ask me to tell you which pastors will remain, because I don't know. Which means that while you sit here in great alarm and uncertainty, guess what? I'm on that same boat. All right? And the last point is that this is being done not as punishment, but as an effort to find a way of turning things around from the decline that has been going on for a long time. It is a decline not only because we haven't figured out how to turn it around ourselves, but because we live in a world that is very unchurched, that has very little interest in church in many ways. In fact, I was at a meeting yesterday with the bishop. Chris can vouch for this. One of the persons there spoke of having talked with his sister about an upcoming wedding and had realized that his sister had decided to bring as the pastor of record for that wedding somebody who got their ordination online. He was alarmed to hear that his sister would do something like that and wanted to check out what was going on. She assured him she absolutely still believes in God. And she assured him that she absolutely still believes in Jesus. And then she said, and he repeated to the bishop, "What I don't believe in anymore is the church." If we do nothing, if we stand pat, do you know what the future looks like? Dominoes? I know that. And so the district superintendent's plan, like it or not, is intended to give us and all the other congregations a chance to find new life and to witness to what we as United Methodists believe and do. Now, I am not here as a shill on behalf of the district superintendent. I am here, however, to make sure we are all clear about a new future that is looming. And perhaps someday it will even beckon, but for now, it's looming. On the seat furthest to the right up front is a stack of 50 copies of the district superintendent's plan. I would be happy to make sure that as you exit this morning, each household takes one of those plans with you. Tom Bowl will also make sure it's accessible online this week. The group of folks from this church who gathered a month ago with others from around the city will reconvene Tuesday evening. At this point, I think I've told you everything that I know with certainty. Let me just double check. Beth, have I missed anything? Bob, have I missed anything? Carol, have I missed anything? I mean, is this is a bare bones, Carol? Thank you. That was point five, wasn't it? That the last piece of the five is that the mission and ministry strategy for the denomination moving forward will be that there will be neighborhoods scattered all over the compass here in the city of Syracuse, where our goal is not preserving the church, but it is bringing life and hope and joy and possibility to the city around us. Now, that's not a strange concept for this congregation, that we have already always understood that's what we're about. And there are other parishes, sister churches, who understand that. But this time, rather than just telling us, here's what we're doing to you, now go and do your best, there is actually a plan to resource churches moving forward so they can begin to figure out how to live together and work together, maybe even love each other, and certainly serve together. Now, do you understand why I wanted to tell the story of Noah this morning? Life changes. Some of you have experienced that more in your own lives. And suddenly the bottom falls out. And the question becomes, is there a way to go on? And as I listen to the story of Noah, at the very least, it means that, love it or not, the only place for safety, the only place for hope, is inside the ark. That staying outside the ark is a sure and speedy way of doom. And lest there be any mistaking about it, the district superintendent's plan is very clear, because sometime this spring, right, Beth, we'll have a chance to vote on the plan. We get a vote up or down. We don't get to rewrite the plan. We vote it up or down. And if we vote it down, Beth, what happens?
We don't get a minister.
We don't get a minister. Remember, some of us are old enough to remember votes in China and Russia that felt that way. I told you I wasn't a shill. But it is important for us to understand that either we're going to get on the ark or we're not. If we get on the ark, I am not going to stand here and promise you it will be rosy. Can you imagine polar bears and tigers? Oh, lots of other animals. It had to be messy and dirty and smelly and nasty and noisy. And whatever this new future might be, it will be just as messy, just as noisy, just as rotten sometimes. But again, remember, our choice is getting on board or getting left out. It's not about getting on board or doing our own. It's about getting on board or going away. Noah and crew did not know where they would land. They did not know where they would end up. It brought them to a whole new place. And it was a very uncertain length of time. In fact, I had to Google, how long was Noah on the ark? I mean, I did my math as I read my scripture this week. I tried to add up all the numbers and I said, can this really be true? I think it is, but my God, it's reading the Bible is confusing. If you haven't noticed, it's just flat out confusing, even in simple language. Over a year. Carol's Family Church has been going through this down in Pennsylvania. And it's been over a year, several years. And the results aren't in yet, are they? But they're in a different place from where they had been. Doesn't mean everybody loved every second of it. Doesn't mean everybody's still happy. Doesn't mean that some folks have decided to opt out. I hope that doesn't happen. My goal this morning is to introduce to you what is being discussed among all the churches with our district superintendent, and to make you aware that we are on a very short timetable. All of this could begin to unfold, begin to play out as early as July 1 of this summer. We don't know which shoe will come first and which shoe second, but it could come quick. But secondly, my goal is to remind us that no matter how we respond to this idea, and remind you, I've got a little lead time on you. And when you read my newsletter reflections on trying to drive in Ireland on the opposite side of the road, and how miserable it made me, I fully appreciate what this feels like at this moment. But my role as a pastor is help us connect our story with God's story. And as I reflected and prayed from across the ocean over the past 2 weeks, it seemed to me Noah was speaking to at least to me, in ways I had never heard Noah speak before. Several years ago in my prior church, Ted and Carolyn, who are kind of pillars of that congregation, every now and then would drop by with a gift for me. And I hadn't thought of it until this morning when I saw what Marg and Chris had created for us for a focal point for us in our worship. And I remembered a little plaque that Ted and Carolyn presented me some time before that I think speaks to at least where I am at the moment. It reads, "Sometimes God calms the storm." You remember the echoes of Jesus' story, calming the storm. "Sometimes God calms the storm. Sometimes God lets the storm rage and calms his child." I don't know what the future holds. I do know the one who holds the future. It is not the district superintendent. It is not even the bishop. It is God and the one who is Lord of the church. I have my guesses as to where a worship center might be come July 1. At least I have my hopes. That's my hope. I don't know, but it's my hope. I have my hope that I will be one of those pastors. Sorry, Ted. But I have no guarantees. Now, your question was what? Okay. All right. But I do know this, that over my 6 years with you, when I have bragged about you, and I have bragged about you an awful, awful lot, I can brag about the beautiful sanctuary we're seated in. I can brag, I can brag about the music program here that has been exceptional for years and years and years. I can brag about the outreach ministry that has been the heart and soul of this church for a long, long time. I can brag about the caliber of the people who come here with incredible gifts and talents, and above all, a willingness to free those for the sake of ministry in God's church and in God's world. None of those. None of those are your best gift. You know what your best gift is? You are a church, believe it or not, that is deep in faith. I can guarantee you right now that all across this city, there are persons sitting in pews hearing this kind of news and panicking. Just flat out panicking. And stress and anxiety blowing them out of the water. Is our stress and anxiety rising? Margot, is our stress and anxiety rising? Okay. But the maturity in this congregation that I have watched for longer than 6 years, I've known you longer than 6 years, the maturity that I have seen is one that says, whatever else comes, whatever else happens, whether we like it or not, we will trust each other and we will trust God. That, my friends, is probably the most important gift you have to bring to the future. It would be great to bring this sanctuary. It would be great to bring the choir and the organ, and I hope we do. But you hear what I'm saying as a pastor? The most important gift you have to bring is to once more, like our ancestors did 100 years ago, find a way to trust God in the midst of utter chaos.